Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to today's talk. We will begin with a little meditation as usual. And then we will proceed. I allow the mind and the body to settle down. Letting go of all restlessness, tension. Letting go of all thoughts of the past. And anticipations of the future. I bring myself to focus on the present moment. Sitting here in this room on this chair. I turn my attention away from the world outside, separating myself from this physical world of activities, relationships, responsibilities. Separating myself from all memory of the past. Turning my attention inwards, I go deep within myself. I experience my entire existence getting concentrated. Concentrated into a point. Into a point of light. In the center of the brain, a sparkling star, the center of all life and consciousness. The soul, the spirit. That energy which was before this body was, that which will be after this body is no more. My original and eternal identity. Just a sparkling star. I experience as though
this physical world and this physical body has disappeared, fading away into the distance, and all that remains is the spirit, the soul. A sparkling star. And I see myself in a dimension of light beyond space, beyond time. Beyond this physical universe of the earth, the moon, the sun, and the stars, I see myself in that heavenly world of light. And I see myself in the presence of God. The supreme light, shining down upon me, a living, conscient point source of infinite peace. Unconditional love, the ocean, the unlimited ocean of purity. The supreme healer, the ocean of love, I, the eternal spirit, am bathing in the light of the Supreme. The soul united with God. Lost in deep, blissful silence. Experiencing deep contentment. Bliss. All desires satisfied. Nothing to do, nowhere to go, just be. Lost in blissful silence. Lost in light. Peaceful. and holding on to this experience of silence and peace and deep inner contentment. I allow my awareness to return back to this world of matter, back to this room, back to this body, this costume of mine. And I once again take my place. I, the soul, the eternal spirit, seated in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears, this body my costume, and I the eternal actor, silent and peaceful. Okay, welcome again to today's talk. Azam had made an announcement before in Danish. Some of you might not be able to follow Danish very well, so I'll repeat it in English. I mean, apart from all the nice things she said and welcoming you and everything, which I won't repeat, that you understand. But she also informed you about the course. We have courses in the center anyway. For those of you who've come here for the first time, you know we have a meditation center on Vodrovsvai, close by. And we have courses, usually the meditation courses are in Danish. Now and then we start courses in English. We are beginning a course in English from in May, 24th May. And the course, which is a Friday, the course will be over 4 Fridays, starting 24th May and then the 3 following Fridays, 7:30 onwards. This will be your first module of meditation where you will learn about the basic processes, basic concepts for the practice of meditation. Registrations will be through the internet, through the site. There is a poster outside with details. If you want, you can have a look at it. So that's information for you. But let's begin with today's talk. The previous session we have been looking at uncertainty, navigating uncertainty. We spoke in the previous session about the reality of uncertainty. It's there everywhere, all around us. There is very little that we can really predict with accuracy and certainty. This will happen. Very, very difficult to predict such things in detailed accuracy. So we are living in a world of uncertainty. But how do we navigate uncertainty? Very often, situations of uncertainty can lead to an experience of insecurity. We spoke about that. Sometimes the experience of insecurity is good because it motivates us to do some nice things. Though, is insecurity a necessity? Is that a prerequisite for human motivation? Is another question. What do you think? Is uncertainty, negativity, a prerequisite for human motivation? Some people say if it wasn't there, we wouldn't have done all the nice things we have done in the world. I don't know how many nice things we've done anyway. But yeah, people say, if there wasn't any insecurity, if there wasn't any negativity, human beings won't have the motivation to become better and to do things. What do you think? You agree with that? Yeah? No? Is it possible for us to be motivated from a space of... People say, well, you know, if you're secure, you won't do anything. You'll just sit back on your backside doing nothing. Because everything is fun, right? People say that. Is that true? Is that true, really? It is, of course, true that when we feel negativity and insecurity, we make an effort to come out of that situation. And in that process, we can create some nice things. But from a spiritual perspective, the ideal is not that. The ideal is to function from a space of security. The ideal is where we are motivated not out of fear, but we are motivated out of a sense of responsibility. Where our motivation does not come from desperation, but it comes from love. Where our motivation comes not from the desire to fill the hole in the soul, but the motivation comes from a desire to contribute to the lives of others. There are different forms of motivation that we can work with. Today we will look at this whole issue of uncertainty in the context of relationships. In the previous session, we were looking at uncertainty in the context of the self. More specifically, we were looking at tasks, activities that we engage with. When we have a sense of uncertainty with the outcome of these activities, how do we function? Today we will look at relationships. We often experience uncertainty in relationships, don't we? Yes? Especially in romantic relationships, yes. Some people were speaking about dating. They say when people begin dating, there is so much of uncertainty. Yes? And then some people say, oh, that's very good because it makes you show your best. And you know, you try to do your best and then you deal with that. Hello, please come, welcome. Of course, we will not get into the psychology of dating today. That's not our objective. But as an illustration, very often a lot of anxieties and insecurities are stimulated in such situations. Please come. There are, I don't know if you can find two seats together, but you might have to. Oh, there are. Okay. So, we will be looking at uncertainty, and from two perspectives. The one perspective is, of course, the experience of insecurity that comes with uncertainty very often. And we are here specifically looking at the kind of insecurity that is debilitating, that is hindering, that is not constructive in any way. And then, of course, we are looking at the experience of security. So is it possible to experience security in the experience of uncertainty, whilst we are experiencing uncertainty? And a sort of a stable, or you could say balanced, sense of security. Because a sense of security can also be an illusion, right? Many times we sort of imagine we are secure. We create a bubble of security around us, only to be disappointed later when the bubble is pricked because it's just a bubble. The sense of balanced, mature security that accounts for uncertainty, because we can sort of brush away, because uncertainty creates anxieties, creates insecurities, we can very often brush it away, make ourselves believe that it doesn't exist, that everything is fine, the relationship is perfect. You know, they say very often, you sweep, there is dirt on the floor, you don't like it, but at the same time, you can't be bothered really cleaning it. You sweep it under the carpet. It looks so nice, because it's not visible, but it's there. And it can create problems later on. So we can sort of create a bubble of security around us, which can also be a problem. Sense of mature, balanced, stable security is what we will look at. And we will look at it in the context of relationships. So, that's our task for today.
Before we begin, I would like to ask you a question. Let's look at our own experiences of uncertainty in relationships. So the first question I would ask you, and I would request you to reflect upon for a minute, would be, in situations of uncertainty in relationships, when you have experienced situations of uncertainty in relationships that have created a sense of insecurity, that have created anxiety, that have been quite debilitated, there is always uncertainty in the relationship, right? That's a different story. But those experiences, when this uncertainty led to an experience of insecurity, anxiety, it was debilitating. It really hindered your well-being, your effectiveness, your performance. Think of maybe one or two such instances when you experienced this uncertainty in a relationship that led to the experience of debilitating insecurity, anxiety. And the first question I would ask is, what kind of a relationship was that? What kinds of relationships are we in that have the potential to create this kind of insecurity and anxiety due to uncertainty? What kind of relationship was that? First question. And the second question, thinking of the same scenario or scenarios, if you're thinking of more than one. So what kind of relationship? And the second is, what was it that created this sense of insecurity, debilitating insecurity? What was it in that relationship, in that situation, or in that element of uncertainty, that moment of uncertainty, that created this sense of insecurity and debilitating anxiety? What exactly was it? Third question, thinking of another situation now. Thinking of situations where relationships, in spite of uncertainty, in spite of any uncertainty, situations where relationships have actually helped you in experiencing a state of deep security, ontological security, you know, deep security of being. Think of those situations. And ask yourself, what kind of relationships were these, again, that gave you this experience of deep security? related to that, what was it about the relationship? What was it in that situation that gave you this experience of security? Stability and security. Okay, so first, what kind of relationships are the ones that really have the potential of making us feel so deeply insecure when we are having uncertainty? Yes? What kind of relationships? Yes?
Close relationships.
You're saying something, Bo?
I'm saying relationships with a high degree of interdependence, where your goals are based on disharmonic.
Yes, relationships that have a high degree of interdependency, relationships that are very close. Anything else? These relationships where there is a high degree of interdependence, would you say that these are relationships that are close, or can there also be other relationships? When you're thinking about them, generally, offhand now, are you thinking about like close relationships? Generally close relationships, okay.
I think they could be, on the work.
They could also be at work. They could also be at work. But if they are at work, what is it that is creating the insecurity? Are they as deeply upsetting and are they as deeply anxiety-provoking at work? What is your experience?
If the chief is, you're dependent on a chief that is not behaving well.
Yeah, but there are we looking at things like task, work, output?
Yeah.
Okay, let's put that aside. Looking at the relationship itself here.
Yes, I think it could be.
The relationship itself.
Yeah.
Not the, say for example, at the workplace, it could also be if the manager is my superior and the manager is going to evaluate, assess my performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm uncertain about what's going to happen there, that would create some anxieties and insecurities in me.
Yeah.
Because of the task associated with that relationship, in form of a performance review or something like that.
But it could be personal too.
Yes, it could be personal too. But when it is personal, is that a relationship that I experience as close, or is it a relationship that I experience as distant?
Yeah, distant.
It could also be a distant relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you explain a little more about the dynamics behind that? It's very interesting. So you're saying that I don't feel close to that person, and yet because of the relationship I'm feeling insecure.
It's because I'm dependent
on the person.
Yes.
For what?
For the next tasks.
So we're looking at tasks again, right?
Yes. And
we're looking at what am I going to get out of that person? Or what kind of a task is going to be assigned to me next?
Yeah, and how is he going to be to me? How is he talking to me?
How is the person going to behave towards
yes.
me? Okay, very interesting. So we are looking at relationships that need not necessarily be intimate in terms of emotional consequences, but you're looking more in terms of task. Our focus today is on relationships that have an emotional consequence. An emotional consequence, but let us look at what is that emotional consequence connected to? Is that emotional consequence connected to the task that I'm getting out of that particular relationship? Or is the emotional consequence connected to the relationship itself? Something to think about. Any other experiences? But we will look at both these aspects. Any other experiences? So generally speaking, yes?
I can come think of an example where I was joining a small course with a teacher, and that teacher made me feel uncertain, and that had to do with the way he acted, which made me feel insecure.
The way he acted that made us feel insecure. Okay, so what was the way he acted?
He was, in my opinion, he was really self-asserting.
Mm-hmm.
He put forward his statements with great power.
Yeah.
And it was difficult for me to react.
Okay. What was it within you that gave that reaction of insecurity, that created that reaction? He was being certain and sure and whatever, absolute. But what was it within me?
Was not agreeing with the things that he put forward, and I maybe would like to say something against it or...
Okay, but why did it make you feel insecure?
Yes.
So someone said something, I don't agree with that, I would like to put forward my point of view, but why is that experience making me feel insecure?
Yes, that's a good question.
Yes. Good question. Yes.
I think it's about trust.
Uh-huh. What about trust? Can you tell us?
To have a relationship based on trust.
Mm.
And when another person speaks some things and you lose the trust.
Mm.
So it's debilitating.
Very interesting. So we have looked at two, three interesting things, at least in my understanding. One is we've looked at intimate relationships that some of you pointed out, that when the stakes are very high, when the relationship is intimate, when it's close, these kind of relationships have very high potential to create a sense of insecurity when we are looking at an uncertain situation. And then some of you also mentioned it need not exactly be intimate emotionally. Like you spoke about the workplace, you're having relationships with others, and that can also create a sense of insecurity and anxiety for certain reasons. You spoke about the criticality of the experience of trust in a relationship. So what you were saying, if I've understood you correctly, is your experience is when we have trust, we can deal with that uncertainty. But when we lose that trust, it creates a sense of insecurity. I don't have trust in what is happening or what the other person will do, or I just don't know that. I don't have trust in that. Let's try and put these things together. So we are looking, of course, at one is the experience of intimate relationships, which we will try and focus on because then we won't have the time to finish. But then there are also other relationships that may not be intimate, that could be a little distant, at least emotionally. But they can also create a sense of anxiety and insecurity under different circumstances. And then we are looking, of course, at a relationship which is usually between two individuals. So there is the self, there is the other, and there is a relationship between these two. And you have spoken about the experience of trust, and you have spoken about then the experience of the lack of trust, when the trust goes down, how that could lead to the experience of this insecurity. Okay. So when we're looking at relationships, let's first look at intimate relationships. Going back to the situation that you had identified in your mind, what was it about the relationship that was uncertain? Yes.
The feeling of love.
It was not sure. Uncertainty. And you were not experiencing the love from the other is what you're speaking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm not sure that the other loves me. For example, the uncertainty is about the other's feelings for me. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
I could lose something.
Could lose something. So, the very existence of the relationship is under question. I could lose that relationship itself. Okay? So one is the relationship itself, I could lose that. The other is something like the response I expect or I want, I desire from the relationship. That could be one. Anything else? Okay, let's work with this. We'll have to move on. So here we are first of all looking about the uncertainty of the very existence of the relationship. The other aspect is uncertainty of, say, an attainment that I desire from the relationship. So the existence and the attainment. I am uncertain, these things are uncertain, and therefore I experience this sense of insecurity. Okay, what about relationships that are not, in which we don't have a big emotional investment, like at the workplace? You spoke about that. A relationship that can also create anxieties and insecurities. Why? What is yes?
I think it's probably because, for instance, if it's connected to the relationship to your boss, then it's connected to the experience of another person having power to be able to decide about your future, your career, or about job realizations you really like to make.
So what is under threat here?
Opportunities
are under threat. So we are looking at similar dynamics. There is some attainment that I desire. Could we say that? Some attainment in form of some opportunity, some task, some project, something that I desire and I'm not getting that. It could also be, for example, the existence of the job itself or the existence of my role in the company, for example. That may be compromised in some way.
Losing your job,
for example, that could also be there. So we have other aspects that may not necessarily have to do directly with that relationship. For example, in an intimate relationship, some of you spoke about the experience of the loss of that relationship itself. Here it may not be the loss of the relationship, but the loss of something else that is dependent on that relationship. Right? Is that sort of capture what you were speaking about?
Yeah, because I think it's also the integrity.
Integrity?
Yes.
Integrity of what?
Yes, because what you say, the boss has the power to define who you are.
Yes.
And when he does that, it's difficult to stand up and say, that's not, I'm also another person, I'm also.
Very interesting. How would we capture this? What is it that is making us upset because of this dynamic?
Just fire the boss.
Fire the boss. That would be the easiest.
I had a
solution.
New boss, and then totally.
Yeah, but I don't know how to capture this. What word would we use to capture this experience? Is it like could it be that I'm looking for some sort of an attainment through that relationship that is under threat? Would that explain this experience?
I didn't understand it.
I desire some attainment through that relationship. It could be the achievement of a task, a project, something that is under threat. Or I could also desire the attainment of an experience of self-worth that is under threat.
Maybe it's more like that.
Something like that? Something more deep, existential? I desire the experience of self-worth through an activity. That activity is dependent on a relationship. And so it is uncertain whether I will be able to fulfill this desire to achieve my self-worth through that activity, because I'm not sure whether that will really happen in the way I would like it to happen. Would that capture some of what you were speaking about? Yes?
I think it has to do with me associating the situation with something else. Maybe it's not very likely that the situation itself should be made me feel insecure, because why should I do that?
Very interesting. We are associating the situation with something else. What are we associating the situation with? What are we associating the situation with?
Parents.
Okay. So anyway, again, I don't know if we'll be able to finish going into the depth of each individual experience within the course of this. But to put it in a nutshell, can we say that there is some desire operating there? It could be the desire for attainment of some outcome, whatever that outcome may be. It could be the outcome of a project with which I identify with very closely. It could be the outcome of experiencing myself to be a person of self-worth and integrity. It could be an experience of self-respect that I desire in that particular relationship or through that activity. But there is some outcome, there is some attainment, there is some achievement that I want, which is deeply connected to my existence, which I am uncertain I will get. Would that sort of capture some of these? What do you think? Yeah? Would it capture?
Yeah.
Any other perspectives? You still don't find it capturing your individual situation.
But I think it's part of it. But I think there's another part of it which is more about me as a person.
We will come to that. Let's come back to that a little later. So we are also looking at some sort of an attainment that is probably connected to the existence of that relationship. And I am uncertain about that. And that creates this kind of experience. We will go into the individual experiences a little later. But let's look at the other aspect of it. When we look at relationships that have made me feel very secure and safe, what has been your experience? What kind of relationships have these been? Yes?
The first thing that came to my mind was with my parents.
With your parents. Okay. Again, looking at intimate and close relationships. But any other experiences? Could it also be distant relationships? Like at the workplace? Where you don't have a lot of emotional investment in that relationship itself, where it makes you feel safe and secure. Could also be that. Do you know the meaning of the word intimate? What is it? Yes?
Tetpo.
Yes, that is something that is close. The word intimate also has another meaning. I intimated him. I was intimated by someone. You know the meaning of that word?
Yes.
Make known. To make something known. That is another meaning of intimate. To make something known. Normally speaking, when we look at intimate relationships, we are looking at two people who get to know each other. They reveal a part of themselves to the other. This person reveals a part of themselves to this one. And there is a known, there is a knowledge, there is a sense of familiarity between the two people, the two entities. Yes?
Well, isn't it when you know the intentions of the other?
Very interesting. But what's your question? You spoke about the intentions of the other.
That is certainty.
That is certainty. If you know the intentions of the other.
Yes.
Ah. And if you're not aware of the intentions of the other, then of course there is uncertainty.
Yes.
Yeah, very true. Probably connected to also what you spoke about. We are not sure that the other loves me, for example. If the other is behaving in a certain way, what are the intentions behind that? There is a sense of uncertainty there as well. So there is a lack of knowledge. That's what you're saying. Even in a close relationship, I might actually have a lack of knowledge about the other's intention. And that can create a sense of uncertainty. Very true. We will look at some of these things today as we go further. For example, the very deep issue that you raised about knowledge of the other's intentions. I have a close relationship, but I'm not sure about the other's intentions. What leads to this experience of not being sure about the other's intentions? And firstly, why should we be bothered about the other's intentions? Why are we bothered about the other's intentions? That leads me back to the second question. What was it in those moments when you felt the insecurity, whatever the relationship was, be it the relationship with a person, a very close, intimate relationship, or a relationship at the workplace, in which there is not so much of emotional investment, what was it that created this sense of insecurity and anxiety? Yes?
Lack of communication.
Lack of communication. Okay. What else? Lack of communication. So, probably what you're saying is, because the communication was not there, there was a deeper uncertainty.
About the intentions. Yes.
About the intentions, yeah. But why are we bothered about the intentions in the first place? Yes?
Because the intentions, they give how we think. And how we think, it's expressed by words, and it's come to have impact on our relationships, is the thinking.
But why are we bothered about that?
I think it has to do with the conditions, no? If you're unconditional, or if like many relationships has many conditions, then I think there's something there.
Okay, but why are we bothered about that? Yes.
Because if the relationship is very important to us, we need stability or security, feel safe, and feel that it can continue.
Okay. Any other experiences? The relationship is very important for us. There are high stakes involved. Mm-hmm. We are dependent on that relationship for many things. Mm. Okay, go.
Because we believe that our happiness is dependent on the outcome of the situation.
Our happiness is dependent on the outcome of that situation or on that relationship in some way. So there is a deep sense of dependence again. High stakes. There are high stakes involved. The stakes could be in terms of emotional responses, which give me a sense of feeling good about myself, sense of well-being, sense of security. The stakes could be in terms of outputs at the workplace, for example. The stakes could be in terms of my own experience of self-worth, my own experience of being an individual. It could be whatever it is. But you're speaking about a sense of high stakes. You know this word, right? High stakes. The stakes are high, they say. Investment is a lot in that particular relationship. That creates a sense of dependence on this particular relationship. And when in that experience, some of you have spoken about either the experience, the actual experience of loss, or the fear of loss. And then, of course, this combines to lead to an experience of insecurity. Why do we invest so much in relationships?
Because they bring us closer to common goals.
They bring us closer to common goals. Okay. There is a sense of attainment in that as well. What else? Anything else?
They make us happy.
They make us happy. Why would they make us so happy? Yes?
Because we sometimes suspect that the other person is going to give up on what we are not ready to give us ourselves.
The other person will give us something that we are unable to or unwilling to give to ourselves. So there is some sort of, yes? Tom or Tom?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, Tom?
Well, basically they improve our chance of survival.
We believe they improve our chance for survival.
Yes,
well,
semantics.
It's true. No, but I agree with you. They increase our chance of survival. Or we certainly believe they increase our chance of survival. But then again, survival of what is something that we will look at. But yes, there is a sense of, we could say, a sense of need. And this could be informed by many, many things. It could be our belief that they increase our chances of survival. They could be anything, whatever. The many beliefs that we carry inside that emerge from the sense of neediness. There is a need operating inside me. I believe that this need will be fulfilled by this relationship. And that fulfillment is related to certain outcomes that I want from that relationship. And when I am afraid that I will not get those outcomes, there is a sense of insecurity. Let us come back to relationships and then look at, so when we are so dependent on these relationships, and when the outcome is uncertain, what are the typical ways in which we respond to that situation of uncertainty? What have been your experiences? What are the typical ways in which we respond to that uncertainty? Stakes are high. Dependency is high. I believe I will get all these things that I am looking for from that relationship.
Anger and accusations.
Anger and accusations. When do we go into this whole spin of anger and accusation? What is happening there? What do we? How do we respond? What is anger and accusation? And through anger and accusation, what are we trying to do anyway? What are we trying to do anyway?
Release our
attention. What else are we trying to do? Any other experiences?
Defense.
Defend the self.
Maybe please the other.
Control the other in some ways. What else? So one could be this experience of anger, accusation, controlling the other's actions. What else?
We try to get certain. You stop. You start communicating, and you try to find out
what is actually happening there.
Yeah. To get certainty again.
So one is, of course, the constructive approach of sitting and communicating and trying to figure out. To try and get a sense of certainty again. One is the experience of control over the relationship. Could there be other experiences? Let's look at the debilitating experiences. communication would probably be a constructive approach towards solving the problem or the situation. Yes.
Withdrawal.
One is withdrawal from the situation. Anything else? We're running out of time, so I have to sort of proceed now. Maybe I'm asking too many questions today. Another experience that some people report, at least, I don't know, some of you might have had that experience also, is you cling to that relationship. You go, you sort of, you know, one is controlling the relationship, the other is clinging to that relationship, where we try to please the person more, even sacrifice many things for that person to ensure that that person will be there, to ensure that what I want from this relationship, I will get it. The neediness is fulfilled. Does that resonate with some experiences? In psychological research, there is this theory that speaks about three responses. Maybe it's simplifying it too much, but it sort of captures some of these responses. One, they say, is moving towards people, where you move towards people. You become more and more dependent and trying to get that experience, clinging. The other is moving against people, where anger, accusation, and also a sense of control, a forced control over the other's behavior. We can see that. And the third is moving away from people, withdrawal or isolation. We look at these three dynamics happening. So one is the neediness on this relationship can make me cling, it can make me control, and it can make me withdraw. And what are we hoping? So withdrawal is a separate story, but we're looking at clinging and controlling. We are clinging and controlling the other. And what's the consequence of that? We cling to the other. We try and control the other too much because we want to get an outcome from that. What is the consequence of that?
Opportunistic behavior.
Opportunistic behavior. I'll give you a couple of examples from, yes. You only create a sense of more insecurity. I'll give you a couple of examples of all three that we are looking at. So we have this clinging, we have controlling, and we have withdrawing. This was a girl I got. Well, she's a woman now, a middle-aged woman now. But she was sharing her experiences of her childhood. How many of these things remind us of some experiences of the past, as you were speaking about. When she was very young, she was about, I think she said about 5 to 6 years old, she went out with her father to a market. And in the market, a friend of her father's came down. And the friend of her father's looked at her and said, "Oh, what a wonderful daughter you have." And the father said, "Do you want her? You can take her if you want." it was just a joke. He said, "Do you really like her? You can take her. You want to take her now?" So, you know, they sort of laughed over it. But this girl, she panicked. She completely panicked. "Daddy's going to give me away." And the fear was so strong, she couldn't speak about it. Because speaking about it would maybe make it real. Daddy would act small girl. I mean, the cognitive processing is not at a very high level, right? She just got very, very scared. And after that day, because that was never spoken about, that fear became a very deep part of her relationship with her father. Just one experience. Just one experience. It became so deep. And every day, she would go out, not every day, but whenever she would go out with her father somewhere, that fear would come, "Maybe Daddy is going to give me away." And then, because of that fear, the clinging behavior, trying to please Daddy, trying to do, holding on to Daddy wherever she sees her father, holding on to him. And what will be the reaction of the father? The daughter is always coming and holding on to him, pulling his leg, pulling his hands, and always trying to be with him. You know, when he wants to spend some time alone with his wife, that is her mother, she will go and get into the middle and then stay with the father. And, you know, what will be the reaction of that? It's a small child. But still, that reaction that is happening, what will that lead to?
Irritation and withdrawal.
Irritation, whatever it is. Of course, he's the father and he loves the daughter very much. He understands that, but he doesn't know what's happening inside. The girl grows up with a distrust of what will happen. That generalizes into a distrust of men as such, because it has not been sorted out. That sort of gets generalized into a distrust of men on the whole, because men may give her away. In the mind of the child, the father may give me away anytime. I cannot be secure in this relationship. I grow up with this fear. Men can give me away anytime. I can't trust that relationship. And she could never have a close relationship with another man because of this deep fear and anxiety that was involved. And she wasn't even aware of this. In the process of therapy, when the history was explored and she went back, she sort of identified many such events in the past that developed this fear. And as a result of that, her relationship with her father suffered. It suffered because she's operating from a space of insecurity and fear. Every time she sees her father, she's afraid. She starts crying. Every time they move away, she starts crying because she feels he's not going to, you know, she's never going to see him again. All sorts of irrational fears because it has not been addressed, the situation has not been addressed. Now, what do you do with such situations? It's a small child. Children don't have those levels of cognitive processing, the ability of cognitive processing. They end up with these fears. What do you do? Blame the parents? You end up with the situation, you grow up and you go, my father never... And then, of course, it can also turn into accusation, anger. My father never cared for me. Not that he never cared for you. But in the mind of the child, the thought is that he will put me away, he will send me away at any time he can give me away. One example of a relationship, a neediness that is coming from the experience of some experienced trauma. Now again, there are certain assumptions. The assumption being, if my father gave me away, what will happen to me? I won't be able to survive. You were speaking about how that relationship is important for my survival. It's an assumption. There are fathers who give the children away. Don't these children survive? Many of them do survive, right? But it's an assumption that I am working with. And then that leads to an experience of trauma, and I'm sort of carrying this along with me for so many years. Another experience, couple, husband and wife, you know, usual story. They meet, they fall in love, and, they believe that no one can be better than the other, and they get married and all that stuff. And they start living together, and of course they're very, very close, and slowly, the relationship gets very, very intimate. But then at in the whole process, what begins to happen after some time that I noticed in this particular couple was the husband starts controlling more and more and more and more. Everything is controlled. Where are you going? Why are you going where you are going? Who did you meet today? Why did you meet them? You know, the subtle controlling. Eventually, what happens? Every day that is happening, does that communicate trust in that relationship? No. What will happen to the wife?
She will leave
eventually. But she starts feeling suffocated because of that control that the husband is trying to impose on that particular relationship. Coming from his own dependence, coming from his own fear, there is the control. I'm trying to control because I want to protect that relationship. But because the control is coming from a space of fear and insecurity, that only creates suffocation. The person wants to break out. After some time, the person just wants to break out from that relationship. And so I engage into a relationship, but my behaviors, so I cling to a relationship. There is a lack of self-respect that I experience. Many of you might have known or you might have experienced in your own life, I am so desperate that I want to protect that relationship, I'm willing to compromise my values, I'm willing to compromise many things just to hold on to that relationship. I cling to that relationship, I lose respect for myself. The other experience of trying to control the relationship, I am actually communicating a lack of respect for the other. And I want to protect that relationship, but because I am not aware from the space that I'm operating from, I communicate a lack of respect for the other. And of course, in both these cases, I experience a sense of suffocation, for the lack of a better word. And then I can have the experience now of withdrawing from that relationship or isolation from that relationship. that experience of isolation furthers the experience of loss, furthers the trauma, furthers my neediness. I will cling and control more, and then the whole cycle can repeat. And very often what we see is people move with the same pattern from one relationship to the other, from one relationship to the other, from one relationship to the other. The same patterns keep repeating, because it was never addressed the first time it happened. One is, of course, this experience of suffocating the self and suffocating the other by making ourselves completely trapped in that relationship. The other is, from neediness emerges also desire. Now, this desire I'm trying to fulfill through this relationship. But this relationship is not enough to fulfill that desire. Perhaps I need something more. It's time to move on. Nothing big has happened in that relationship. No betrayal, no trauma, nothing. As they say in Danish, what do you say that? We have vokset fra hinanden. We have vokset, eller vi er vokset?
Yeah.
We are vokset fra hinanden. We've grown apart from each other. What happens in this process? Why? You know, I have this good friend of mine. She's now quite, she's in her middle age now. She had a husband, and they had a child, and they had a very nice relationship, very good, companionable relationship. You know, when we speak about love in psychology, they speak of various forms of love. But two forms of love that people research a lot on, one is passionate love, that thrills you, excites you, and whatever it is. And the other is companionate love, where the love is quite stable and mature and sort of, it's in the form of the relationship of a companion. There may not be so much of thrill and excitement to it, but it's a different kind of love. So initially, she had this experience of passionate love with this person that she was with, her husband. After some time, you know, you get to know each other, you get used to each other, and then it sort of, there was a good, mature understanding between them, and there was no conflict, nothing. But they were sort of hanging around. They said the spark had gone from the relationship. People often say that, right? The spark had gone. This excitement had gone. They were sitting around, looking at each other in silence, and then she decides, you know, it's not working out. Why is it? The spark has gone. It's not working out anymore. You know, perhaps we need something new. We need something different now. So let's agree to divorce. So we can look at something new. New experiences. After all, we want new experiences in life, right? New excitement. Something new. So they agreed, yeah, that's right, let's move, let's look at something different. So they decided, just like that, they decided to get divorced because the spark had gone from the relationship. And in this process, there was another very interesting thing that I could observe, and that was the subtle anger that was coming out. I don't know the husband so well, but I knew the wife very well. The subtle anger that was coming out in her. And you know what the anger was for?
If I don't
know. No. I don't find this exciting anymore. And you are responsible for making me excited. You are not good enough for me because you are not giving me that spark, that excitement that I want to chase away all this trauma, all this experience of the past that I don't even want to remember. You have to make me feel good. And she could experience that anger coming out. That anger would start getting communicated towards the husband. You know, irritation. And then the husband hasn't done anything. Suddenly he feels this woman snapping at him. You know, nothing. And you know, some simple things like, you know, they're laying out the table, the dining table. And so she's sort of laying the plates. And he's just standing there looking at the plant. And she's getting irritated because he can't understand that he should get the plate and put it on the table. Why should I be doing this alone? Simple things like that. Where are they coming from? Unnecessary. He's not thinking of troubling you. And she's thinking, oh, see, he doesn't want to help me. No. He's bothered about that orchid. He's seeing that the orchid is dying. And he's wondering, what do I do with this orchid? He's not thinking about not helping you. But she thinks, no, he's not helping. He doesn't want to help. Intentions. She starts imagining intentions where there are really no such negative intentions. Coming from my own desperation to fill up my own neediness. And then they decided to go away. Anyway, then she goes and she gets married to someone else, and he goes and he gets married to someone else. And they have a son together, right? So they keep meeting on and off quite frequently. And in a couple of years' time, they realize that they are such good friends. But now she's got married to someone else, and he's got married to someone else. And now then she tells me, you know, I was so stupid. If I had just waited for 2 years, I left behind a wonderful, solid, stable relationship just because I wanted thrill. In any case, what happens with the second relationship? It's not thrilling again after 3-4 years. It's not thrilling anymore. So now what? Go for another one. And that's not thrilling. And then do what? Go for another one. And after 4 or 5 relationships, understand, relationships can't thrill me anymore. Forget it. Let's meditate now. You could have done that before, right? Or let's do something else. And the real problem is not sorted out because the awareness is not there, right? And I'm just going on either clinging, controlling, isolating myself. And the whole process, I experience trauma, I experience loss, I deepen this experience of trauma. And then the whole cycle keeps repeating again and again and again. So what to do? What is this desire for intimacy anyway? What is this desire for intimacy anyway? This desire to feel close to someone else. This desire for the other to make me full. Where is this coming from?
It's coming from the need to give.
Very interesting. So there is this need to give.
To give.
But along with this need to give, there is also here the need to take in the process of giving, right? That makes us dependent.
Yes, in one way. But I don't know which one is that. To give is the first or to take is the first.
Is it possible to look at relationships without the motive to take? Is it possible to look at relationships in that way? Without the motive to take? Or is it always social exchange? You give some, you take some.
I think it's
It's possible to go beyond and look at not taking and only giving in a relationship. From a spiritual perspective, we say that's the ideal. From a sociological, psychological, social exchange perspective, we say, hey, that's a myth, that's a fantasy. There is always a give and take in relationships. Right? But we do know from psychological research as well, our relationships with others very frequently depict our relationship with the self. Maybe unaware aspects of the self. And the understanding that some of us at least work with is the desire for achieving intimacy in a relationship with others is a reflection of the frustrated desire to achieve an intimacy in your relationship with yourself.
One more time, please.
The desire to achieve intimacy, closeness in a relationship with others is a result of the frustration of our desire to feel intimacy and closeness in our relationship with ourselves. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
The understanding...
If you explain...
Yes, the understanding is that when we are looking at intimacy in relationships, we are also looking at intimacy with the self. But as we know, the self has these many components, but 2 components that we speak about, the ego, the part of the self that emerges as a result of our experiences with the external reality, our parents and caregivers and our experiences with life. From a spiritual perspective, of course, we have this other experience of the self, the soul, the eternal me, the energy, the light, that is the core of human existence and experience. When I'm looking at intimacy with the self, we're looking at knowing the self, because the word intimate, as we have spoken about, is about to make known who I am. We desire to know the self. But in the process of knowing the self, if I really want to know myself completely, I also have to know
how this has developed, which also means I have to know the experiences of trauma that I have inside me, which means I have to address all those experiences of the past that have made me, first of all, lose touch with myself because they are too painful. There is a pain, there is a trauma inside me that has evolved through my experiences that is too painful to look at. I can't know it, and yet I want to know it, but knowing it is so painful, I don't want to look at it. I don't want to look at it. At the same time, I have the desire to feel close, but I can't feel close to myself because feeling close to myself is too painful. I want to compensate that by feeling close to someone else. So you make me whole. You make me complete. I want to feel close to you. But because the whole process is motivated from this experience of trauma and pain, motivated from neediness, it is motivated from the insecurity, it leads fundamentally again to the insecurity. And so we say, knowing the self is a painful process. Many times people speak about that. In many psychological theories, they speak about how it is important to know the self, but it is also important to know, but it is also important to know that the self has some very deep, dark, traumatic experiences which one has to confront. They speak about the dark aspects of the self, the dark experiences of the past, whatever it may have been. From a spiritual perspective, we say, the pain and the fear of knowing this part of the self, which creates the neediness, it can be very, very painful, yes. But what can make it possible is when I make the simultaneous effort of knowing this other part of myself, which is by its own definition, without trauma, that part of me that is full, that part of me that is whole. Simultaneously, can I know that part of me? And this becomes an extremely important process in meditation. Very often, people like to meditate because it's a stress buster. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a stress buster. Why is it a stress buster? Because very often it takes our attention away from issues that are creating stress. Right? You sit in meditation, you become silent, for some time you're not thinking about anything else. You're not thinking about the anxiety that your job is creating. You're not thinking about the problems you're having with your wife. You're not thinking about all these things. For some time, you are silent. It's a stress buster. Because it takes your attention away from all these issues that create difficulties for us. Right?
Not
all these. It doesn't even do that sometimes. Is that enough? Is that enough for transformation?
No.
If that was enough, you go for a jog around the wonderful lakes of Copenhagen. You focus. You're away from all these things. It's a stress buster. Listen to some nice music. Go watch a nice movie. Focus your attention on that. It's a stress buster. And therefore many people say, what's all this meditation stuff anyway? I don't need this meditation. It's a new church. Right? They say. It's fashionable these days to criticize the church, right? It's a new church. It's just a church. So people push it away, and then, but you're right, if I am going to use the process of meditation as a stress buster, that will be its only utility. In the philosophy of Raj Yoga, we look at meditation not as a stress buster. We look at it as a deep process of transformation. Which means when we are sitting in the process in meditation, it's not just about becoming quiet and not thinking about other things. It is actually about becoming quiet and thinking about some things very, very clearly. Which means paying attention to this part of the self and what is happening in there. But at the same time, paying attention to this part of the self, which is the experience of fullness. And when I can experience this simultaneously and I can make this shift from here to here in the process of meditation, then I can work at a level of relationships where I am nourishing relationships. I am giving in relationships because I am not working from a space of emptiness. And no matter how much uncertainty is there in the relationship, I will be able to feel secure because I'm operating from a space of fullness. Meditation is about creating that space of fullness. In Raj Yoga, we say, Raj Yoga is about the union of the soul and the supreme, the connection of the soul with God. Very good. People say, for so many centuries, people have been praying to God. That hasn't really helped mankind much. How is it going to help now? You say, if you turn to God, the sorrow of the soul will be healed. People have been trying to do that for so many centuries. I don't see much of healing happening in the world. And therefore, all these mosques and religion is the opiate of the people. It's really, I mean, what sense does it make? In Raj Yoga, the approach is, what is the method I employ to connect to God? If I try and connect with the Supreme from this space of trauma and insecurity, if that is the space from which I'm operating, which means what? Oh, I have all this pain, I have all this sorrow. Oh, my father has been terrible to me, my wife has been so terrible to me, my children don't understand me, I have all this sorrow. Oh, poor me, oh God, heal me. It will not work. It will not work because, from a spiritual perspective, I have not taken responsibility for myself. If I want real benefit from the process of meditation, I first have to shift from a space of being a victim, taking responsibility and stabilizing myself in the stage of being a spiritual being, work on creating a space of fullness within you, and then when I connect to the Supreme, healing can take place. You need money to draw more money, right? You need something to draw more of that. I first have to shift to a space of fullness to actually experience more fullness. If I'm trying to experience fullness from a state of emptiness, it will never work. One of my meditation teachers, she's very, very senior. I had a very deep experience once with her. We were sort of sitting in a group, and one person came in, and he was speaking to her, and he said, you know what? My father, I love my father so much, and my father died last year, and from 1 year, I have been so sad, because my father is not there anymore. So then, but now, today I have realized that if I can make God my father, all that problem will go away. So now I have written, it is God who is my father. And you know what my meditation teacher said? You would say, well, yeah, that's good, that's nice. You've sort of, there is a relationship that is creating some suffering. The memory of the relationship is creating some suffering. You're replacing that by connecting that relationship with the Supreme Being. And that's very good. What my meditation teacher said, she was very, very deep. She said, you can't make an unlimited relationship that the soul has with the Supreme into a limited one and expect to get benefit from that. Because what is happening there is I'm still operating from the space of the ego. I'm operating from the space of pain and suffering and trauma. And I'm saying, fill me up now, fill me up. No, that will not work. I have to make the effort to move into a space of fullness, which is the practice of soul consciousness. Make effort to move into a space of fullness. Increase the intoxication of being a soul. What does it mean to be a soul? What does it mean to be completely independent? What does it mean to be immortal? Nothing can destroy me. Nothing can harm me. I am that spirit. Create that state of fullness and then move into a connection and a communion with the Supreme. Then we experience the transformation, the strength that we need to deal with life situations of uncertainty. Otherwise, it will work for some time. I push things away, become quiet, and I feel I'm very relaxed. I go out, I face the same challenges, I fall back into the same pattern again. And after some time, I feel, oh, all this yoga, this meditation, it was good while it lasted, but it doesn't really work for me now. I need to do something else because I haven't really practiced it very well. I sort of forced myself into it, imagining all sorts of things. I remember, I'll conclude with this final case. I remember a girl, she started meditating. She was having some difficulties in some relationships and all that. And then she sort of decided, okay, so it's now time to change my life. How do I change my life? Get out of all these problems and this relationship and start meditating. For 5 years, very, very intense, she meditated. every day, morning, evening, and she did all the things that people told her she should do to lead a spiritual life. She became vegetarian, she did everything. After a couple of years, she started feeling more and more empty. After 3 years, she started struggling with the whole process of marriage. It wasn't giving her any meaning. And after 5 years, she just quit. She said, this is rubbish. It doesn't really work for me. And all these suppressed experiences, they all came out. She went back to the same patterns of relationship that she had experienced before. And when we examined her case, we were looking at this person, her intentions of going into this process of meditation, not as an honest effort at self-transformation, but as an escape from reality. So just escape from reality, push everything aside, just become silent. When I'm silent for some time, yes, but what happens is there is a limit. Because I have not addressed these deep issues, I feel peaceful for some time, but then I hit a rock. And because I hit a rock, I can't touch the deep experiences of the soul. And because I cannot touch the deep experiences of the soul, I don't feel full. I feel empty. So when we practice meditation, let us be very, very aware of what is actually happening. I will feel silence initially. I will. Silence the mind, you feel silent, you feel quiet. And because I have not been used to the silence, I feel good when I feel silent. But is that a silence of emptiness? Or is that the silence of fullness that comes when I connect with the experience of being a soul? It's extremely important to experience the silence of fullness. In Raja Yoga, the process of meditation we have is not about emptying the mind at all. Please understand, it's not about emptying the mind at all. It's about filling the mind with the experiences of the deep, eternal self. That gives the soul strength. Then the process of connecting with God makes sense. And then I start experiencing transformation in my life. And then it doesn't matter how much of uncertainty is there around me. I may shake a little bit because no one is perfect. But I will hold on to the truth inside me. And I will be able to experience security. Because then I'm not trying to take things from relationships. That intention will come. That motivation will come. But I can be aware of that. And I can transform that. This is not something I need to do. Because that will only make me lose respect for myself. Clinging to people, controlling people, and in that process destroying that relationship anyway. What's the point? I become aware of that, then I can shift from the space of the ego to the space of the soul and work with that. Shall we try and do that now?
Letting go once again of all thoughts of the past and the future. I turn my attention away from all experiences of this physical existence, not as an escape, not to run away from pain and trauma and suffering and anxiety, but with the understanding that all the pain, the trauma, the anxiety, the insecurity is a creation of the ego. And I am a lot more than all these experiences of life that make up the ego. I am the eternal self. and I move into this experience of being the eternal self. Going deep within, cutting through the layers of experiences. I go into the experience of being a soul. A being of light. A being of might. My entire existence concentrated into a point source of eternity. And stabilized in this experience, I know that as a soul, as a spirit, no fire can harm me, no ocean can drown me. No success can return my self-respect, and no failure can upset me. Those are all aspects of the ego. The limited self. But I am the unlimited. I am eternity. Taking full responsibility for my existence, for my life, that I have created through my thoughts, through my assumptions, through my beliefs, through my perceptions. I experience the deep inner strength of the spirit. As though this entire physical world has disappeared. And I, the soul, the being of light, see myself in that eternal world of light. I see myself in the healing presence of the Supreme. Bathing in the light of God. Not from a space of emptiness and insecurity, but from a space of fullness, completeness. With the awareness that what I need I already have. All I need is to experience it. The love, the strength, the happiness. And operating from this space of fullness, I am here to give to the world, not to take. In all relationships, in all activities, operating from a space of fullness, soul consciousness. And holding on to this experience of strength, stability, and deep security. Holding on to the light of the Supreme. I allow myself to gently return back to this physical world of matter through which I, the soul, interact with this physical reality. I take my place once again in the center of the brain, looking out through these eyes, listening through these ears. Silent, peaceful, complete. At peace with myself, at peace with the world, I am a being of peace, the peace that comes from the experience of fullness. Om Shanti. Tak for i dag. For the next 2 weeks, you may know, but just to remind you, we won't be having talks for the next 2 weeks. The next talk in May, we will take up the topic of complexity. And we will be beginning, I think, in the second week of May, the second Sunday of May. So please keep that in mind. Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.